the DA's office or the mayor's office pushed for rather draconian penalties.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of politics today, and especially in a time when television and media spectacles is really what wins people's campaigns, is, you know, images on television of smiling faces with empty promises. And so pie in the face, when it gets broadcast internationally on CNN, NPR, all the local channels, that kind of direct action politics, I think, is much more damaging to the image, the spectacle of the mayor, than, say, yet another protest against his policies, which are crucial. Those protests are crucial in terms of building a mass movement to be able to seriously change this system. And in terms of just throwing a pie in the face, the spectacle of that and his image as the grand emperor of Billy Brown makes people laugh at him, and that's very effective.
It can't cry all the time, so it's nice to be able to laugh. And indeed, I guess there was, you know, people, you read in the media, initially there was a sympathetic kind of response. Why can't the mayor take a joke? But then eventually it quickly became kind of very sanctimonious and rigid, and why are these people attacking our mayor? Oh, he's black. They're attacking him because he's black, and so forth. But in terms of the publicity that actually got out, there was mention that there was a concern about the homeless, but weren't there a specific series of concerns that the Cherry Pie 3 had?
Well, the specific concerns was that when the mayor was pied, he was kicking off his Great Sweep program, which is basically a community service to help clean up trash and litter off of the streets of San Francisco. And simultaneously, as the Great Sweep program was being initiated, plans for doing sweeps against homeless people, police coming into areas, arresting people, taking people's stuff, confiscating their belongings, pushing people around, basically to get them out of certain areas of the city. And weeks before, Willie Brown had made a comment about homelessness, saying that he was at the point where he felt like people just needed to be swept away like trash. And so by initiating the Great Sweep program, trying to get people to clean up trash, the Cherry Pie 3 threw those pies as an effort to bring attention to the fact that here was Willie Brown talking about cleaning up the city, and simultaneously he was also implementing a police policy of arresting and forcing homeless people out of certain public areas.
What's been happening to the homeless in the last 4 months while the Cherry Pie 3 have been in jail?
Well, actually, it seems in a lot of ways that it's been more, a lot of politics has been going on. A lot of Supervisor Amos Brown and Willie Brown, some of the other Board of Supervisors.
The shopping cart menace.
Exactly. And some of the other Board of Supervisors that are loyal to Willie Brown.
And this, what this means is that Brown has been targeting homeless people pushing shopping carts?
Homeless people pushing shopping carts. He's also made a big issue out of people panhandling on the meridians in like off of highways or busy streets, talking about how that's a public safety hazard for people to be panhandling on the streets. I was just trying to see who got arrested right now. Also, he's been targeting panhandling in general, trying to pass ordinances saying that nobody can panhandle within certain feet of, stores. So we found somebody who was arrested right now.
Now go away.
Love you. Where are you going?
We love McKay.
We love McKay.
McKay, the person arrested, is being driven off. That was Christopher Kress, who I think may have disappeared on us and taken off.
And that was an interview with Christopher Kress on Friday when I went up to San Francisco to participate in a Take Back the Streets rally, which was kind of internationally coordinated around the world against the economic tyranny of the industrialized nations, I should say the heads of the industrialized nations meeting as the G8 group or the G7 plus Russia group in Cologne, Germany. And it was a celebration of our streets, in this case San Francisco, our streets. People were sneaking through the streets in colorful costumes. We stopped at different shops that were kind of linchpins in the international slavery racket, whether it was the Gap, and there were several others, Chevron, the stock market, and we did various protests and skits. And at one point, the point where you heard this last interview with Food Not Bombs worker Chris Kress, who is also a close friend of Rahula Janowski, jailed for pieing Mayor Willie Brown in November, serving 6-month jail sentence. I think she's going to get out today, actually, after 4 months of jail time for putting a pie in the mayor's face and injuring his dignity, and in order to bring to attention of the citizenry, as you heard, homeless issues. This interview is taking place at the corner of 3rd, I believe it was 3rd and Market, or San Somme and Market. It's one of the streets in the business district intersection where the police stopped the demonstrators from setting up a kind of a blockade that would have allowed for a party. It was going to be kind of a lockdown blockade wherein a person would have put up a huge tripod and then hung from the tripod, and it couldn't really be gotten down from the tripod without injury, and so it would put the police in a difficult position and give time for people to form a kind of a celebration around it with couches and string and colorful banners and rugs, and turn the streets essentially into the living room of the people to reclaim the streets. Instead, it happened on a side street because the police did arrest this man, McKay, who was the suspected tripod person, and he was taken away in the paddy wagon about the time that you heard that interview with Food Not Bomber Chris Crass. And well, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrob's peer, Robert Norse. And if you have any questions, comments, or new exciting songs that you wish to sing on the air, it's time to call the studio phone, 427-3772. That's open. The line is open, 427-3772. We were just talking to Chris Crass about the Berkeley City Council's upcoming kindler and safer marijuana enforcement proposal. This is a proposal designed by Normal and the Berkeley Cannabis Ordinance Oversight League, intended to implement Proposition 215 and redress an upsurge in the felony arrests of petty pot offenders pursuant to the police merchant campaign to, quote, clean up Telegraph Avenue. Observers view the arrests as contrary to Berkeley's 79 ordinance, declaring that marijuana enforcement be the lowest priority. The Berkeley Cannabis Ordinance Oversight League and NORMA, a national organization for the reform of the marijuana laws, are proposing a new ordinance, the Kindler and Safer Streets Act of 1999, to clarify the city's policy and monitor police activity so as to prevent undue marijuana arrests. And that's happening at 7 p.m. June 22nd, in 2 days, at the City Council at Martin Luther King and Center Streets. For those of you who are up there, if you want more information on this, you can call the Normal coordinator, Dale Gerringer, at 510-540-1066, or Don Duncan of the Berkeley Cannabis Ordinance Oversight League at 510-486-8083. If you miss these numbers, just call 423-HUFF, and my producer will give them to you, or I will when I'm off the air. There's also apparently some concern about additional police officers on Telegraph. We have our own concerns down here on Tuesday. As you may know, we have our own city council meeting. There will be an oral communication period Tuesday at City Hall, right across from the main library, 7 o'clock. You can come and speak about any issue not on the agenda. And I believe that's lots of issues, since the city council doesn't pay much attention to people and putting issues on the agenda. And we wish they did. Whereas the police review board, which can't do anything about anything, but now is starting to talk to people, does concern itself with what people want to some extent, or has begun to at least allow them to talk about it. At the last Citizens Police Review Board meeting on Monday, the longest ever meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board, there was several hours of testimony on the case of the police abuse around the May 22nd demonstration that particularly swept up activists Jim Costner, Steve Argue, Vince Lombardo, Nassim Zarifi, and Kaolin Kuo. I can never get her name right. I've got to start getting better about that. Anyway, five activists were arrested, and custodially arrested, taken off in a paddy wagon, and the four of those arrests are serious. That is non-infraction. They face jail time. Costner, Zarefi, Lombardo, and of course Steve Argue, who has been getting lots of support from folks in different cities, even in different countries, and Argue was the focus of the Citizens Police Review Board meeting on Monday. The demand by almost everybody in the audience, and there were 60, 70 people there at least, was that Argue be given a public hearing and a early independent investigation. So that's going to be happening. That's not going to be happening, actually. The Citizens Police Review Board did not do that. It tied up 3-3 on the issue of an independent investigation. that sucked. And the reason that it did that was the reason that that problem arose was because three of the nominees, or three of the commission members, board members of this police review commission are, right-wingers on police issues. They are not interested in public hearings. They're not interested in independent investigations, much less early independent investigations. That we're talking about board members Tony Guerrero, Michael Hernandez is appointee, Lisa Rose, our own Mayor Catherine Byers appointee, and what is his name? Morse, the third man, who is Mike Rotkin's appointee. The three new people on the board appointed by the three new council members have generally been better, although they've made some major boo-boos as well. Sandy Brown, Becky Blythe, and the chair, Arnie Leff. And they voted to have an early independent investigation. Because it was a tie vote, there is no investigation yet. Lisa Rose, who had been out of the country for at least a month in Italy, for some reason felt she was qualified to make a vote on this issue, even though she wasn't in the country. And she voted to stop the investigation. It must be said, however, that she did agree to have the issue reconsidered when the board meets again a week from tomorrow at City Hall. And for those of you who want to get some input before that time, you can either come to City Council at 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, on the 22nd, 2 days from now at City Hall, or you can contact the City Council hotline, 420-5020, and demand that on the City Council agenda there be an independent investigation, an early independent investigation. That's the first thing you can demand, because they can make that investigation happen even if the Police Review Board doesn't want to do it. They can direct the board to actually have an investigation. You should also ask them to fire Lisa Rose. The City Council can fire Lisa Rose. She should be fired for a number of reasons, not just because of her vote on this issue, but because she has shown a continued pattern of hostility toward those who are trying to get real independent review on complaints against the police department. She has shown much too much sympathy and involvement with the police department instead of challenging them on to at least present an independent case on issues like the Happy John Dine shooting. She helped to rubber stamp that whole situation, close it down, so there never was an independent investigation or a public hearing around the shooting of that activist, John Dine, who was shot in November of 1997 by Officer Connor Carey, two bullets to the gut, and allegedly for brandishing a toy gun, an incident that no non-police witness, and there were many, saw, but that all the police witnesses, of which there were two or three, claimed to see and then gave contradictory testimony on. It was a scandal, and even the Santa Cruz Sentinel called for an independent investigation of the Happy John Dine shooting, as indeed today they seem to have. It's not quite clear what they're saying here. They have a long editorial, Police Review Board Remains Flawed, the day is Sunday, opinion piece in the Sentinel, and it's not a terribly good opinion, what opinion of the Sentinel is. However, they aren't specifically calling for an independent investigation of the David LaFavre pepper spraying and police treatment of Steve Argue, the activist who's been cited with a felony for allegedly punching police officer LaFavre after LaFavre was engaging in bizarre pain compliance hold behavior against a woman with a 5-year-old child in her hands in a blockade of a police vehicle, rather than use negotiating skills, rather than make a general announcement to the crowd and use kind of general pushing back skills as we saw used in San Francisco with batons. This officer took it upon himself to attack the most vulnerable people, those carrying children in the crowd, and provoked the crowd to defend those people. I mean, that was really, in very simple terms, what happened. And those people who did defend them, with really pretty minimal force, now face massive charges. Argue faces prison for this. And he's getting a lot of support from organizations, and there's been, talk even at city council levels of seeking an independent investigation. Indeed, the rumor has it that Mayor Catherine Byers, who did appoint Lisa Rose to the Citizens Police Review Board, wanted her to vote for an independent investigation, and she not only didn't do that, she didn't even abstain. She voted against an independent investigation, and that's why she should be fired, and that's the matter that you should tell the city council when you call them at 420-5020. Tell them to fire Lisa Rose and leave a message for Mayor Byers. Say, Lisa Rose needs to be fired for her bad votes, not just on the Argue case, but on the Happy John Dine case, on trying to close down oral communication to the board, on essentially making the board inaccessible to the people that it should really be most accessible to. Not that this board is anything more than a joke. Even if it were fully accessible, it would still be a joke because it has no disciplinary power. But conceivably, it could be a joke that leads to a change, because if it really became an instrument for the public, it could result in legal reforms that actually extended its powers, provoked grand jury and city council investigations. Hopefully, we could get the police chief fired, as he should have been long ago, the city manager fired, and some real reform instituted, as we heard people kind of talking about in subdued voices after the city council election. The city council, you know, had a new majority last fall. All these wonderful new council members were supposed to do such fine things, and now we see them, unfortunately, backtracking badly. Indeed, in the case of the Dolphin Lee project, to kind of skip to a second topic, the run out the Hispanics in the Beach Flats area at the behest of some scan and city council insiders like Andy Schifrin, Don Lane. Some have said Bruce Van Allen is involved, I don't know, who have their own kind of designs for urban renewal in the Beach Flats area. They want to run off all the activists, the Hispanic activists, who were living in the Dolphin Lee projects, and that actually SCAN, in essence, voted to recommend that, as well as numerous other proposals, to its steering committee at a meeting they had last week. Enraging activist Phil Bear, who's a part of the Beach Flats Residential Neighborhood Association. But I'm running around too much. Let's stay on Police Review. Police Review is coming up. For those of you who are interested, you can, as I say, call City Council 420-5020, 420-5020. Leave a message for Mayor Byers and say, Mayor Byers, I want you to dump Lisa Rose, and also I want you to push for an independent investigation. And Byers is out of town, but she will get your message before the City Council on Tuesday. It would also be good to have a bunch of people going to City Council and saying that, for those of you who can stomach that City Council chamber scene. Much more repressive than the Police Review Board scene, but that's how it is these days in Santa Cruz. You can also, on Tuesday at noon, meet at the Buttery with Sandy Brown, who is a member of the board, probably the best member on the Police Review Board, who will talk to you about items on the agenda and anything you want to put on the agenda for the next Monday meeting of the CBRB, which is a week from Monday, June 28th at 5:30. And I think that folks are planning to appear again there for a massive support rally for Steve Argue and those arrested, and a support for the idea of change in the police department. Well, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and let's hear a little bit of appropriate music before we put on a few cuts from what was said at that CPRB meeting on Monday, which was so long, in a way so historic, because it was the first time the public was allowed, given free rein to speak on a topic that was on the agenda, on the CPRB agenda, this question of David LaFaver's abusive behavior at the protest of May 22nd by police against peace demonstrators.
At your service. Go, Randy. Happy John Dine was a friend of mine, lived here by the sea. Down on the streets of Santa Cruz, he always laughed at me. Abby and I went to church one night, thank God, and ate our fill. Asked him if he had any money, give me a fake dollar bill. Where is Abby? He has gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where's Happy? Shot down today. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Happy was as harmless as a butterfly. Loved everyone he met. He never left the 60s. Didn't really care for the internet. One day he was grooving to some tunes, doing the happy bop, when a bullet entered his chest. Came from a Santa Cruz cop. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where is Happy? He's gone away. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Now people like Happy, I do believe. Heaven is great, great spirits. You know, like whatever you got here, less of, you got more there. Could happen. So I think he's up there. I think he's looking down. And he's probably saying, hey man, right on. I know you. Power to the people. Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say. Yeah, I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say.
On homelessness headquarters, 7 o'clock on Friday night. We should be out partying, but no, we're hanging out in San Francisco talking to Tim. And Tim, you say that there hasn't been a lot of beatings lately in San Francisco, but there's lots of citations.
Well, I wouldn't.
You can talk too.
I would not say that there have not been a lot of beatings. My outreach isn't well enough that I know that for sure, but in speaking with people, as far as like the way the police conducted themselves in 95 with Frank Jordan, the way they conduct themselves now, they cite people more. But as far as the serious violence episodes,
now when I talked in Santa Cruz, I spoke about actually vigilante violence apparently independent of the police department, like youths on the street. Some accuse of them being sons of police officers, but they're not cops. Actually, they jump in and shout, cops, get up, but they're not cops. They're all skinheads in black.
So, Robert.
Yes.
If I send you a special
reading. Tim, you're talking about an upsurge of legislation against homelessness?
Yes, and the slight reduction of the amount of violence against homeless people at SFPD is a part of the marketing strategy of the city to harass homeless people, and what has replaced it is the legislative approach. Not only more laws, but increasing the penalties for the laws that exists, taking them from infractions, which are common for like camping in the park and sleeping in the park, and blocking
this, they moved it up to a misdemeanor.
They haven't, but it's the type of things that they're working on right now.
But with the ICORN decision, that means that for jury trials, public defenders, and necessity defenses, for every such offense.
The ICORN decision?
The ICORN decision, you must read your street spirit. Actually, the ICORN decision is one of these flyer areas. ICORN decision, new tool to reclaim old liberties. Rather small, but that's right. It's about the California Supreme Court recently upheld a lower court decision that if you're camping and you want to raise the necessity defense, you have a right to raise it, an unconditional right to raise it. Judge cannot say, not enough basis. If you're trying to sleep and the police are arresting you or harassing you, you have a right to say, I can stay here, and then make a positive showing that there is a necessity for you to do so that requires violating the law.
The necessity defense in what I've seen, hasn't gone that far in San Francisco because that, I want to make sure I put this right. Like, on the one hand, it's still legal in the city to sleep on the sidewalks. You can sleep in the parks during the day, like from six in the morning to 10 at night. So it's, I mean, for people who suffer the most on the streets, the laws have been terrible. For those who are like warrior types, and they've been able to manage. But the thing is, on...
I mean, you're saying it is illegal to sleep on the streets, even if you're off to the side, that is illegal under a city code?
It's still legal to sleep on the sidewalks.
It is legal to sleep, or it is illegal to sleep?
It's legal.
That's what I thought you were telling me, because in Santa Cruz it's illegal to sleep everywhere, sidewalks, streets, parks, private property, unless it's a backyard or a side yard.
Right, so I'm losing my train of thought, but there's a whole...
We're talking about the necessity defense, and we're also talking about legislation taking the place of what, just harassment enforcement, or... Well, you say enforcement has doubled under the Matrix-style arrests, right, and citations, since Jordan's day, or more than doubled.
If we could stop just for a moment.
Sure. Go ahead.
What's happened in the city is that the police officers have gotten, they've been doing every, I mean, in the first month of the Matrix program when Frank Jordan was mayor in the fall of
93,
there were more arrests, or not more arrests, but there were more citations for camping in the park than in the previous 5 years combined. And what has happened is that, on the one hand, it's being, not only has it, what the police have done is like they've decreased the violence, but instead what they've done is they've increased other methods of harassment that they've learned to get away with.
By decrease the violence, you mean decrease the ticketing? Because I mean, Jordan's police, you know, whereas they went out with these little, outreach bullshit teams that said, we'll give you a ticket for a non-existent room, or jump onto the waiting list, or run across town. But they didn't actually go out and beat up homeless people, per se.
What I mean, my violence is a physical violence. I mean, there's certainly a violence to the harassment of systematically giving out tickets to people who aren't violating the law. That's like the big... that's the big cover-up. The fact that the vast majority of these tickets are bogus. The reality is that half these tickets get dismissed right off the bat because the police officer doesn't even file the report or doesn't file the information properly. Of that half that makes it through, approximately 50-60% get dismissed because the officer doesn't show up to court. So quite simply, right off the bat, the tickets, 80% of them, the police officers don't follow through on them, and that's why they never become dismissals. However, if the person who's given a ticket doesn't fight it, then...
It becomes a failure to appear.
It ends
in a warrant.
After the half that like don't get dismissed outright, those half that make it through, even though more than half, I mean, of the 50% that actually make it to court, that don't get dismissed outright, of those 50%, the people who would have shown up would be, had the cases dismissed if they showed up. And with homeless people, a lot of the folks don't show up, and the officer doesn't show up either, but because a homeless person doesn't show up, they nonetheless
suffer a warrant. They
get a warrant and then
judgment of guilty. Or judgment of, a warrant, failure to appear.
And warrants will lead to be homeless folks to get arrested for... So what happens is police officers in the city, from neighborhood to neighborhood, they know who's homeless in their community or who's poor in their community, hangs out with homeless people, and who does not. And they systematically cite these folks in the hopes of getting the snowball rolling.
Getting out of town.
And this is going on regularly. It's like, I mean, the 39,000 tickets Matrix Safe has given out under Mayor Frank Jordan's Matrix program were dismissed due to lack of evidence. However, the rate of tickets being given out has increased since then. the police enforcement operation hasn't stopped, even though the police enforcement operation hasn't led to the results that it's supposed to lead to.
No, I understand. And it's increased by a considerable, like it was a factor of 2 in 97, then it was 2.5 times in 98. What do you hear about 99? Are those figures accurate and hasn't gone up since, is it continuing to rise, the number of citations compared with the Jordan era?
I'm not really sure, but they are above the Jordan era, and they're remaining steady there. So what's happened is, like, they're continuing to cite people. Instead of reducing the amount of citations, what the police have done is stop doing the really violent, obvious episodes of violating people's
rights. Like food not bombs arrests of food servers.
As in arresting a woman for creating a public nuisance by allowing homeless kids to sleep in front of her house in the heat.
This was when?
This happened in the fall of 95 during the re-election campaign of Mayor Jordan.
And here we have weenie burgers like Amos Brown pushing these wild and crazy use a shopping cart, go to jail scams.
Well, what's happening is that the police are avoiding doing such most blatant, stupid stuff.
And go ahead.
I mean, basically what's happening is the police... A good way to put it is that during the last 7 or 8, 10 years, the enforcement actions of the police against homeless people...
In San Francisco.
In San Francisco have increased irrelevant to illegal activity.
And also whether it has an impact even in terms of driving homeless people away or if they find it's a successful campaign.
They think it will end up being a successful campaign.
Well, they always have that idea, but I mean, this is a 10-year, when they're 10 or 20 years down, actually they're 30 or 40, I mean, who knows how many years down the road, they could actually do some research and figure out if it's actually worked. I mean, has anybody ever done that kind of research? I know we do have anecdotal evidence that in Santa Cruz, for instance, a lot of people came to town in this fall of 95 when there was apparently an upsurge of harassment in San Francisco. And I think that was true also more recently, or a year and a half ago, when the Garcia addicts, needles, and fire mongers and the park fabrications were, you know, being played in the media, you know, by the Chronicle. People left San Francisco, or at least came down to Santa Cruz. There were more people coming in. But have you found that, have the police been successful in driving large numbers of people out of town? It's not a trick question. You could say I don't know. I mean, that's possible. That's a reasonable answer, too.
The police, by and large, have not been successful. I mean, people aren't homeless because they want to come to San Francisco, and if they don't want to be in San Francisco, then they're not going to be here anymore.
But it's true, you can drive people away. We've seen that, for example, in Kosovo. We've seen that in other refugee areas. If you make conditions miserable enough or threatening enough for them, they will leave the area. So that's true. I know, though, that I think what you're trying to say is something that Paul was saying, Paul Bowden was saying, that if you did a survey of the people who are renters, the people who are owners, and the people who are homeless, you'd find a greater proportion of homeless people actually live in the area than any of those, or were born in the area, than those other groups.
People live where they live because they want to live there, not because they're homeless or they live in a house. And the theory is that you can eliminate homeless people without others. And that's not...
What do you mean, without others?
In that homeless people are a part of the greater community, and that they're a part of the heart of it, and that a heart touches everyone in the community. And
you're saying by driving away homeless people, you do damage to the community? Is that what you're saying?
Well, they're a part of the community, and being homeless in and of itself is not a bad thing. And when you drive away people because of that, then you are necessarily driving good away from your own community.
Right, but the question was not that. The question was, you know, have these measures been successful in driving people away? And what's your answer to that?
They haven't been, because this is a problem that is nationwide. It's a problem that's being encountered in every major and many minor municipalities. There's nowhere to go. This problem is everywhere. It's a nationwide problem. So what happens is, with homeless people, it's happened the same thing with people in houses. They're living where they want to live.
Well, that's interesting. Is there other stuff you want to add before I push my boat off into the night?
The window between what police officers are actually doing to poor and homeless people on the street and what people think is going on is a barrier that must be breached. If there was a video camera out there with a citizen activist for every time police officers did an enforcement action of one of these quality of life laws against homeless people, then you would either see a great drop in the number of those citations, or you would end up seeing a lot of police officers getting in a lot of trouble.
You don't think the police officers would be supported by superiors who, for example, the Giuliani regime in New York is notorious for this, saying that, there are such things as a broken window theory. If you let the neighborhood begin to deteriorate, it all goes to hell and crime escalates. I don't think this theory is accurate. I think it's a bunch of horseshit. But it's the one that's being used in a lot of regions to justify the current anti-homeless laws. You could have all this stuff videotaped after saying, well, sir, you can't sleep here, you can't sit here, you can't have your backpack here, you know. And you don't think that the middle-class community would support this and say, well, they are sitting in the street, why don't they go into and have an espresso or something? You know, they could do that, or possibly get a nice room in a hotel.
It's a basic problem with this government. I mean, if the government wants to work on broken window theory, it needs to start with itself.
Thank you, Tim. We've been talking to
Tim Mashock.
Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where is Happy? Shot down today. And it's, yes, the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay.
Hi, my name is Tracy DeAngelis, and I am a city employee with the school district. And I was a protester there that night, and I was actually one of the three eyewitnesses to Steve's beating. Prior to Steve's beating, I also witnessed several violations of our civil rights, of our human rights. What everybody has said tonight has been right on.
And we're now listening to selections from the Citizens Police Review Board, a testimony from last Monday on incidents of police misconduct at the May 22nd protest against the war in Kosovo and Democratic Party hack Representative Farr and the other Democratic luminaries who were doing some fundraising as the bombing was going on. This is the CPRB hearing, a very brief part of it from some of the more eloquent spokespeople. You're listening to Tracy DeAngelis, and she will be followed by Nassim Zarifi, who was arrested and gives a very humorous and eloquent description of what happened.
There were absolutely no warnings. They just came like gangbusters out of the side of the museum. It was totally perpetrated by the police what happened that night. We were being peaceful, we were nonviolent. It was totally uncalled for what happened. I watched Officer Lefevre shove Steve to the ground. I then witnessed him beat him with a baton. I watched Sergeant McMahon and Officer Patrick Biani kick, stand, torque, twist, and while Steve was in a fetal position, he was not being, he was not wrestling on the ground, which has been stated for the record in the past. He was in a fetal position being beat. I was so disturbed by this. I got several people involved. We formed a defense committee. I think you can see all the support that Steve and the other protesters have that night. I also think it's important that you know that people all over this country and internationally are watching what happens in Santa Cruz with this case. I'm just going to list the places that I've received money from. We've raised close to $2,000. We've received money from Connecticut, New Jersey, Chicago, Tennessee, Arizona, South Dakota, all over California, San Diego, Chico, Hayward, Berkeley, Oakland. There have been defense committees formed for Steve in San Francisco. San Francisco is here tonight. San Jose is here tonight. Richmond is here tonight. There's also been a defense committee formed in East Oakland for Steve. And we've had emails come from The Hague. We've had emails come from Yugoslavia. We've had people at anti-war protests in France talk about what happened here in Santa Cruz on May 22nd. I think that's very important for you folks to know that people are watching. It's not just the people in this room. And I just want to just urge you to hold a public hearing and not solely an investigation, because I am suspicious.
Here with us as the tape turns over, we're listening to Tracy DeAngelis at the CPRB meeting last week.
Get up and stretch or something. I know you've been sitting down there, sort of tired. Go ahead. You can. Yeah, they look pretty cush. So my name's Nassim. I'm one of the people arrested. I just want you to be clear, you know? I don't get so falling asleep on me here. And the people, I was there at the protest. I arrived a little bit late, but just in time for a police attack. And I'm not even joking. So the people that came, there's been people mentioned, they called her Julianne, her name is actually Julianne, with the children. There was a woman, Julianne, with her child, Nanifar, and her child, Bianca, was in the arms of her partner, Almond. These are my friends from Canada who were traveling through town. They'd arrived that day, and I met them completely surprisingly on the street, and we went and had some lunch, and I said, listen, there's a protest going on. There's been protests. We've been protesting all the time. And I said, there's a protest going on. McPherson sent you. I told them a little bit about it. I said, let's go. I said, okay, well, we'll go. Their voice, you know, that this is not okay, that Santa Cruz has been voting for the war, that they have a big convention having that it's an honor, Desi supporting the war. I said, okay, listen, I don't know what this means to other people. When I hear that there's bombs dropping on innocent people, that means something to me, and we're going to go show it. So we went, we grabbed some, we're musicians, we grabbed some professional instruments, and we went, and we're expecting to go to that, and then go check out a concert that night. And what happened is, most of it has been, true as far as I saw. We were standing there, there was a glass wall. I'm sure you know, I don't know, the McPherson Center, people having their dinner on the other side, trying to pretend like we weren't there chanting and yelling and whatnot. The boombox, or the bomb box, had sounds of the war playing, and it was explosions that were going on, and there was a real tape sent from someone in Yugoslavia, and we had it up to the window, and out of nowhere, three police officers came through, grabbed the boombox. There's a very short thing where someone tried to pull it back and they ended up stealing it, and then they grabbed the window and walked off. And I was standing there dumbfounded at what just happened. And people got rather upset, as you can imagine. Now, imagine if these people didn't have on blue uniforms and guns, and they're just standing there with a group of people. All of a sudden, three large people come out, take your stereo and grab somebody. You're going to be a little bit upset. So they took her to the paddy wagon. People started getting real angry, because we're already sitting here understanding that our government is perpetrating an unjust war against people. We all know that they have no concern for human rights or ethnic genocide. They're practicing it against African Americans in our country. They didn't do shit about people in Iran because they didn't have no oil there. We understand that. So we're already upset about that. I don't want to take too much of your time. So we're already upset. So these police officers came like that, and it's my belief that they came to provoke that, to provoke some sort of response. I'm sad that we weren't more unified and organized. You can't blame us for getting angry when something like that happens. So they took her to the paddy wagon. We stood in front of it so that they couldn't leave, and we demanded to know what she was being arrested for,
we're all yelling, why is she being arrested? What did she do? Because she didn't do anything different than the rest of us. And they came home saying they threw her. She's a young 18-year-old Asian woman. And Golding is her name. And we're saying, let her go. Why is she being arrested? And we just stand there and told us, go down the sidewalk, you know, whatnot. And I stood up and they sort of pushed me back with their batons. And I was standing there, sticking my hand cab on the other. And we're sitting there wanting to know what was going on. And Julianne was to the left of me with her child. And there's an older man in between us. And an officer of the favor came out, walked past me. We were all in front of the patio. I walked past me, said something to the older man I couldn't hear right, and he sort of backed off. And then he went to Julianne, said something to her, which I couldn't quite hear. And she was holding the child with one arm, put the other arm behind her back, and said, I don't want to get arrested. I just want to know what she's being arrested for. That's all. And he said something back to her, and she said, listen, I just want to know what she's being arrested for. That's all. He grabbed her fingers and started squeezing them together. I didn't know exactly what he was doing, but I said, look in her eye. Her eyes widened. She started screaming, ah, he's hurting me, which made her child started to cry. And she told me later that he was squeezing her finger, rolling her fingers together, squeezing them and staring in her eyes, like, seriously, communicating with his eyes, like, shut up, stop yelling, you know, and just back off. And he was very intimidating and frightening, obviously, the kid was screaming. That happened for, I don't know how long, and then some people obviously rushed in to try and stop this from happening. They get in there and say, whatever, I'm shocked. I'm saying, whoa, what's going on? And next thing I know, I'm and my friend who had the other child, the two-year-old, in his arms, trying to get, you know, I think he might have grabbed a cop's arm or something, and said, yelled at him and said, you know, let her go, get her hands off of her, and cops grabbed onto him, and he was trying to get away and cross the street, and this other cop grabbed his arm, he was holding the child with two arms like this at this point, grabbed his arm and